Nuketown Radioactive number 44 for Tuesday, February 20th, 2007. This time around on the podcast, Nuketown Radioactive gets Doug, or at least an entry on Dig, while I struggle to organize comics that haven't been filed in a decade. If you're similarly organizationally challenged, then figure out how to hack your life with the 50 best life hacks from 2006 and an exceedingly geeky calendar for 2007. Finally, I'll have a review of Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, the expansive role-playing game for Windows and Xbox 360. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive, the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and as you may have noticed, the podcast is slightly less occasional this time around because I'm actually getting a second podcast out in about a week's time, which is as amazing to me as it probably is to you. And basically the reason for that is I'm just trying to get back on schedule, trying to get kind of focused again in my out-of-work schedule, I guess you could say, my home's work schedule, whatever. I think doing the podcast kind of forces me to stay focused on my own personal projects, in so much as I'm gathering stuff for it, I'm taking time and putting it aside to work on stuff. And I think it's really easy to just kind of slack and just to not do it. I mean, the same thing happens with the website from time to time. But, you know, with a podcast, it's something that really needs to be kept up a little bit more than the blog. It's easy to kind of go and throw up a news story on the blog and, you know, that just keeps rolling on and the website just keeps on rolling on. But the podcast kind of starts to languish if you don't update it more than, say, once every 5 weeks. So it's good to be recording on a somewhat regular schedule again. The intro music was taken from one of the loops in GarageBand. It's called Daydream. And Sue, my wife, heard this track at one point, I think when I was doing one of the promos for Nuketown. And she said it sounded kind of like a sci-fi western. And you know what? We're all about the sci-fi westerns here at Nuketown, as as you may have guessed from my occasional posts about and my occasional fascination with Serenity and Firefly. Moving on to just, well, some site news. We've got Radioactive on Dig. That's right. Radioactive is now on Dig, thanks to Aralar for submitting Radioactive to Dig's new podcast section. Basically, if you're not familiar with Dig, how it goes is you get to go to the Dig website, you follow the link, it'll be in the show notes, and you can dig individual stories, which is means you can vote on them. So in this case, you would vote for one of the podcasts. Hasn't seen a huge amount of traffic there, but I don't think I've really promoted it that much on Nuketown, so I need to make sure that there's a link to the whole Dig thing through the podcast page. But if nothing else, there will be one in the show notes. You'll need a Dig account in order to do this because the whole thing remains in beta, but you should be able to see it without having to actually vote. So anyway, many thanks to Aralar for doing that. On a personal note, I'm going to Gen Con. That's right, Gen Con Ho! It is, it's been, I think 6 years since I've been to Gen Con. I think the last time I went was in 2001, the summer of 2001, and wow, I am officially going. That's right. I've got my reservation. I guess my registration is actually what you want to call it, but I've got my registration for Gen Con. I've got my hotel room, which is about a mile from the convention, but you know what? That's still doable, at least this year. I think next year we'll make a more of a concerted effort to make sure we're there as soon as the freaking registration goes live so we can get a room. We were just a little bit confused as to how all of that worked this year, and it seems like every hotel within easy walking distance of the con sold out by, let's see, I think they opened it for open hotel registration at 2 o'clock, and by I think 7 or 8 o'clock when we got on, it was completely booked. The nearest hotel was 8 miles away. So my friend Aralar again managed to get on the phone. He's been to India a couple of times for business, so he knew where to call and managed to get us a hotel room that was at least within suborbital distance of Indianapolis. It's funny. I mean, we went to Gen Con in Milwaukee for a couple of years, and the whole reason why they moved Gen Con to Indianapolis was supposed to be to have a better deal with this hotel rooms. The city was supposed to be able to accommodate hotel room reservations a lot better and get everybody closer to the con. And to have it sell out in that many hours, I mean, I know they want to keep it in the Midwest, but we need to find a freaking city with more hotel rooms next to the convention center. This is kind of ridiculous. But I am excited to go to Gen Con. This is going to be a whole contingent of my local gaming group is going. At this point, there are four of us. There may be five or six by the time everything is said and done. And I just cannot wait to see that registration packet to start registering for events. I have no idea what I'm going to register for yet, but I think I'm going to make an effort this year to play the games that I don't get to play around here. I mean, normally I would go to Gen Con and play, well, probably D&D and Call of Cthulhu. This time around, I want to play Cthulhu, maybe a little Spycraft, maybe a little Savage Worlds, all the kind of stuff that I'm interested in, but don't really get to play just because of, I got a D&D campaign. Actually, I got a bunch of D&D campaigns. So, that's usually what we stay focused on. But wow, Gen Con, it's going to be awesome. If you are going to Gen Con, let me know. I will certainly be posting additional notes as additional updates about Gen Con as I get closer, what my event schedule is going to be, and that kind of stuff. So hopefully I will run into people out there. I'm certainly looking forward to meeting some of the other gaming podcasters when I got out there. I think when I get out there, I think that was one of the big reasons I wanted to go to Gen Con this year, because last year, as you know from listening to the podcast, I listened to a lot of Gen Con related podcasts while I was painting the house in September. And, it just got me really jonesing to go. And I talked to Sue, and she's got some relatives out there, so we're making it a whole family trip. We're going out, I'm going to Gen Con, and then before we go to the con, I think we're going to visit some relatives, and it'll just be, it'll be a cool family trip. It'll be an interesting family trip because it'll be the longest we've ever driven in the car with the kids, but well, it should be interesting, if nothing else, right? Now, as I mentioned, I am working on getting organized. Last podcast, I talked about the fact that the third floor office has become the new gaming room. And one of the things that's been on the office for a couple of years, just because, well, I didn't really have a better place to put them, was my comic book collection, which is rather expansive. I think I have, let's see, we'll do a quick count here. Probably about 15 comic book boxes, most of which are packed with comics. I'd say I probably have about 13 full comic book boxes. And this represents, I've been collecting since 1989, I guess, my junior year in high school. In fact, I picked up my very first comic, which was Classic X-Men with a backstory penned by Jim Lee. I remember it very vividly because I picked it up in the airport coming back from space camp, of all places. And, reading that book and getting hooked on that X-Men story and seeing Jim Lee's art really just kind of launched me into comic book collecting. And I've been collecting ever since. So I've got more than a decade's worth of comic books, going on 2 decades worth of comic books on my third floor. And something I kind of discovered as I was going through these comics is, in the back of my head, and I think a lot of us suffer from this or experience this, in my brain, I'm still 17. I think that's what it comes down to. I still like the things that I liked when I was 17. I think I'm a little bit more organized. I'm a little bit more outgoing. In some ways, I'm more geeky. In some ways, I'm less geeky than I was. But, in my mind space, I'm kind of still where I was when I was 17. And nowhere is this more evident than in my comic book collection, which was superbly organized in high school, but has fallen into chaos and disorder, though not quite ruin, as I grew older. I'm 35 now, and while attempting to put away my latest comic book purchases, the ones that it took me a month to actually get to the store to pick up, I discovered that I've got a whole cache of comic books that I'd never organized, never filed, never even bagged. Heck, I'm not really sure if I even read a bunch of these. Somehow I've gone from being a comic book collector reader to just a reader, and I'm not quite at the point where I just buy comic books and toss them because, well, frankly, they're a little too expensive for that, but I'm certainly not taking as good of care of them as I used to be, as witnessed by the fact that although I had all my comics and I was starting to organize them, I had them up on the table in the gaming room, the cat threw up on all of my Ex Machina comic books, which, if anything provides a good reason for throwing the cat out the third floor window, that would be it. I was very angry, but I do have much better impulse control than I might have had when I was younger, and the cat still lives. But if he does it again, folks, oh, this freaking cat. Anyway, I shouldn't blame the cat. I should blame myself because obviously I haven't been taking very good care of my comic books. So I am finally getting organized. Everything's boxed. I've sat down and I finally the comics in question, like the comics that were really the most chaotically disorganized, just piled in a box, was basically all the Bat titles, Batman, Nightwing, Robin, that kind of stuff, which I've been collecting on and off since college. So I had a whole bunch of the Nightfall comics when, Batman gets his back broken by Bane. I had a bunch from 5 or 6 years ago, and then a bunch from Bruce Wayne Fugitive. So I had all these comics, but I didn't really have them in any kind of a system. I didn't have them in a box that was labeled Batman. I didn't have all the Batmans and all the Detective Comics and all the Nightwings in the same place. So after a weekend of basically doing nothing but comic books, I now have those organized. So the next step is to go out and buy a couple hundred more bags so that I can put all these things in bags and finally, definitively organize everything. Things are still kind of loose. I've got a box of miscellaneous Marvel, a box of miscellaneous DC. And the next step after that will really be to just sit down and figure out what I want to keep. I suspect there's a lot of Marvel stuff that I don't read, that I don't necessarily have a really great run of, like Iron Man or Fantastic Four, stuff that I bought a good chunk of when I was in high school, but I don't think it's a particularly representative example of either of those titles. It was just kind of what I was picking up haphazardly. So I do need to kind of go back and look at it, but I think I'm going to lose some of that stuff like New Warriors, things that are just probably really dated from the early 90s. And I'm not really overly concerned about getting, a huge amount of money for them. I really just want to reclaim the space. So if I can get back, say, 2 to 3 comic book boxes worth of space and be able to get my collection to a point where it's easily accessible, it's better organized, and I'll be ready for when Jordan and Luke are ready to start reading comic books in a serious way. I think that's ultimately my goal, is that I want to have my collection be in a kind of shape where they can read those comics. Now, of course, they will have to take good care of them when they read them, but I would like to be able to be the kind of dad that, is able to pull out some comics and let their kids read them. I don't know if they're really going to be interested in it, but I would like to be able to figure out where the heck stuff is in case they do.
I'm Mark Kinney.
And I'm Chris Heim.
And we have a podcast called All Games Considered. All Games Considered is a show about tabletop gaming in all its forms.
We don't really talk about video games.
In fact, we don't at all.
We try to stick to a certain theme in each show.
And sometimes we even succeed.
We're not that bad, are we?
Yes, we're an irreverent bi-weekly taste of gaming.
We'll help you find some free games out there. Maybe some rare, little-known games.
We'll tell you how to improve your games by ripping off the mass media.
We have special guests once in a while.
Or at least we hope to.
We'll even tell you where to find a convention or two.
Check out our webpage at allgamesconsidered.blogspot.com. You'll find links to the shows and our RSS feeds.
We're also available through iTunes.
All Games Considered is a proud member of the Sci-Fi Podcast Network and the Gaming Podcast Network. So remember, allgamesconsidered.blogspot.com.
In net news this week, I do want to mention that Jason Adams, he of the Random Signal podcast, is back at it. Like me, he had a long hiatus because of a crazy January at work. And, well, I just want to say it's good to hear the Random Signal again. I just started listening to the latest show at the gym, and it is excellent as always. So please go check it out. So while I was busy not doing a podcast in January, I did still manage to come up with a couple of things that I thought were kind of cool for the new year. Now, granted, it is February, but I think they're still useful. The first is the best 50 hacks for your life from 2006 from the website lifehack.org. And basically, if you're looking to do a little self-improvement this year, check out Lifehack's year-end roundup. That would be the boggle for this podcast. And you know what? I'm not going to go back and re-record it like I've been doing the whole podcast, because I need to get this thing done so I can go to sleep, so I can get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work. But I won't get into that story right now. Anyway, this includes suggestions on how to deal with email without getting overwhelmed, writing tips for bloggers, suggestions for fighting the flab in your workday, not at your waistline, but we've already been talking about that, project hacks, and suggestions for best about every aspect of your professional life. It's pretty cool. It's kind of weird, long URL, so I will just refer you to the show notes, or you can just go to www.lifehack.org. And I'm sure if you do a search for 50 best hacks of 2006, you'll find it. The other thing I want to talk about, and this may be some people's cup of tea, and it may not. If it is, it's probably Earl Grey, but anyway, the website at the end of the universe has a free 2007 calendar. Basically, it's featuring pulp pinups and science fiction writer birthdays for 2007. So basically what they did was they took a bunch of covers from, like, I think like the 40s, the 50s, and 60s, and use those as the cover art for the calendar. So, you know, the art for February, January, whatever. Then they proceeded to populate each month with the birthdays for the various science fiction writers that were born in that month. It's pretty cool. It's got covers from Fantastic Adventures, Galaxy, and Weird Tales. And if nothing else, I think it's worth it to download it just to kind of get a feel for the covers of yesteryear. Definitely a whole other world. You can find that by going to www.theendoftheuniverse.ca/node/405, and the link will be in the show notes. That is the theme song to Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion for Xbox 360 and Windows. It's put out by Bethesda Softworks and 2K Games. And that theme song was, I didn't get express permission to use it in the podcast, but it's available as a free download from their website. So I figured it was fair game, especially for a review of their game. Anyway, this is just a hugely massive single-player role-playing game for the 360. And like I said, for the PC, it is just, wow, to begin to describe it is just, well, just difficult. And I guess I'll have to just start with how the game itself really starts, which is the emperor of the Empire of Cyrodiil escaping from assassins through his capital city's dungeon and the cell of one soon-to-be-famous prisoner, which would be you, the main character. The emperor soon falls to those who hunt him, which are a band of mysterious mystic assassins, and he asks you to carry his basically holy-slash-magical amulet to a trusted friend, who in turn leads you on a quest to find the emperor's last surviving son, a bastard baby hidden away years ago. As the game unfolds, it is revealed that demonic forces from the plane known as Oblivion are invading the realm and seek to conquer it. Only you can shut the gates, find the Emperor's son, and defeat Oblivion. Or not. this is just... wow. I've been playing it for weeks, and except for escaping from the prison and carrying the amulet to the Emperor's friend, I have pretty much completely ignored the main quest. Instead, I've gone exploring in what amounts to be a freaking huge world. I have visited cities, joined guilds, stuck into locked houses, stolen goods, been arrested, traveled through a vast, vast wilderness, stumbled across ancient elven fortresses and ruined human keeps, found shrines to evil gods, and fought in gladiatorial arenas. In short, I've done pretty much everything except save the world. The game is a huge sandbox, and it's impossible to resist the urge to see what's over the next hill, to find that next lost ruin, to just push it just a little bit further. And yes, this would be the other reason why Radioactive was silent for so long, because although I was, you know, I would actually have just a little bit of time when I get home from work, but I'd be kind of stressed out, and I would be playing this game to relax, and oh, it's just a wonderful way to just unhook your brain for a while. The game looks amazing, with beautiful vistas, wonderful ruins, and thunderstorms that really feel like thunderstorms. I mean, the first time I went out in a thunderstorm, I was just kind of wandering about, watching the clouds, actually looking at the clouds and watching the lightning play amongst the clouds. It was that cool. As I say, you can ignore the main quest, but if you really do want to follow it, the game points out what to do next by giving you waypoints, which is great for more casual gamers, and which really was a criticism of some of the earlier games in this series. I hadn't played any of them because basically I didn't have a system that was powerful enough to do it, and from what I understood, Morrowind for Xbox just wasn't quite there in terms of performance. On the 360, it's been looking and performing great, but more on that in a little bit. Basically, you know, in Morrowind, it was easy to just kind of get lost because, again, it was this huge world, but there weren't the waypoint system apparently wasn't as well developed. So you could easily get lost with the main quest and you weren't quite sure what to do next. And with this game, although you're constantly picking up quests just by talking to all the NPCs that you come across, it's easy enough to figure out what to do next because you can activate a quest, you can make it your main quest, and then it points on the map to where you're supposed to go next. So that is certainly helpful, and you know, for a game, my days of playing like Ultima 4 and having three binders worth of notes that I've taken and charts that I've created with my friend Dave to figure out, okay, you know, what goes where and what do we need to, you know, what's the sequence for activating this magic item or for performing this ritual to enter the abyss. I just don't have time for that kind of stuff anymore, guys. You know, with two kids, it's just freaking impossible. So, it's nice that the game is basically managing this stuff for you. And the other nice thing I like about it is that, you know, with other games, when you have all these quests, and I'm looking at you, Knights of the Old Republic, you can kind of get lost in the quests that you need to get done, you know, and you have so many of them, you don't really know what to do next. This, it just, the whole quest management system, much easier. I like the different levels of the maps. And although it is huge, I've never felt as though I was really and truly lost from a usability standpoint. I've kind of felt lost just wandering around, but you know, you can always look at the maps to see where you should go next. Now, the game is not perfect. Actually, it's far from perfect. It's had more crashes and slowdowns than any other Xbox 360 game I've played. Now, admittedly, that's not a huge number, but still, I have never had, well, aside from Star Wars Legos 2, which had a known bug that caused it to crash if you did a certain thing on the Escape from the Death Star. This game, I hadn't had any games really crash on the 360, and this game, even with my brand spanking new 360, the one that replaced the one that blew up, it still has problems. It will still kind of just stop while you're moving around on the board and wait to load, and every once in a while it will still crash, but fortunately the 360 has recovered every single time. Advancing your skills in the game is difficult. It's not a Knights of the Old Republic style D20 inspired skill points. Instead, your skills like stealth, marksmanship, alchemy, and illusion increase with use. So each time, you know, in Knights of the Old Republic, when you level up, you get a certain number of skill points and you allocate them to the skills that you want within your class, just like you would in any D20 game. In Oblivion, it doesn't work that way. When you level up, you can increase your stat scores, which indirectly can help you with some of these skills. But the only ways to improve your skills, be they class skills or not class skills, is through practice. Now, you can go around and talk to trainers and pay them to train you up, but it costs a freaking small fortune. My sneaky Darkblade-like sniper, who has illusion as a primary skill, is unable to cast much illusionary magic because basically I can only use one low-level illumination spell from that school. There may be others out there, but I haven't found them yet. So I have to keep using that if I want to train up. If I want to try and basically speed up the process by going to a trainer, I can do that, but it costs a huge amount of gold for very small, minor increases. So basically, every time you're paying a trainer, your skill increases by one. I'd like it to at least increase by two, so you know I can get to cast these spells before I'm, say, I don't know, 30th level. The voice acting tends to repeat itself far too frequently. I mean, I realize this is a big game and it's got thousands of NPCs, but I'd really like some more diversity in my NPC voices. If nothing else, you know, use a different set of voices for each city. You know, it's just, unfortunately, you just keep hearing the same voices over and over again. They got, you know, one or two voice actors for each race, or at least that's what it seems like. So it's just, that was disappointing. It doesn't bother me too much because the rest of the game is so amazing and there is so much to do. But I really would have liked to have seen more diversity. And finally, they have Patrick Stewart as the Emperor. So he voices those opening lines, and I think there's a couple cutscenes where he ends up voicing flashbacks and stuff like that as well. And I've come to the realization that if you're going to do a video game, and you're going to have somebody recognizable like Patrick Stewart, you really need to make the Emperor look a little bit like Patrick Stewart. it's a huge disconnect to hear such a famous voice coming from basically a really dowdy, depressed, doomed patriarch. And, you know, I wouldn't think this would hang me up so much, but I think this is the first time I've really encountered this, aside from, I think, Area 51 and David Duchovny's voice work, which is also another real huge disconnect between the actor and the visuals on screen. And I think, you know, it's just one of those things, you need a couple of things to be able to hang your hat on. And I know there's probably all kinds of likeness and copyright issues, but you know what? Work them out, because it just, it really just kind of takes you out of the moment when you see this figure that looks like one thing, but then the voice is, you know, making you think of something else entirely. Now, overall, it's an awesome game. It's expansive, it's engaging, and really, it's worth every hour you spend in it. The only real drawbacks are to it is that you will be spending a huge amount of time with it. I mean, I usually pick it up and play it like for half an hour a day. So it does have that kind of pickup potential, and you can resolve quests quickly enough that you don't feel like you're just constantly plodding on through the main story. But it's going to take you a huge amount of time to finish this game, which can take away from playing with your online friends, and say doing things like recording a podcast.
You must be listening to the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbn.com. Amazing.
And we're done. That will about do it for Nuketown Radioactive. And as I look at the baby monitor, I can see that I finished it just in time because Luke is starting to cry. So I'll finish this up real quick here. Coming up on the next edition of Radioactive, you can expect reviews of Midnight Syndicate's Best Of album Out of Darkness and the horror board game Betrayal at House on the Hill. I'm also still working on book reviews of Learning the World and A Deepness in the Sky, which are two science fiction novels. So, well, a lot of good stuff lined up for the next couple of weeks. If you want to send me feedback, and I'm always looking for feedback, you can email me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can Skype me. The username is nuketown, and I promise I will be on this week. And finally, I am available on MySpace at www.myspace.com/knuquist. Links to all that good stuff will be in the show notes. And as always, you can stop by the website and leave a comment. A couple people have been doing that. We've got a nice little Nuketown community going on. So I definitely encourage you to stop by, check it out. Let me know what you think.